And coming up next, on the stream of freakradio.org, or perhaps more likely on the archive, if you're listening to this on hopefully a re-cobbled Huff website, which is back in service, this is the February 18th, 2021 edition of Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You'll be hearing three fairly long interviews with Cornerstone Carol Denny of Berkeley, Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, and attorney Anthony Prince, I should say attorney and activist Anthony Prince, who's counsel for the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, as well as a number of other homeless unions throughout the country. He spoke with us at the Huff meeting. Keith McHenry spoke with us the day before the Huff meeting on, well, it's today, when, as I'm speaking to you, on the 18th, but the day before, and he gave us an update as a sort of an addenda to an announcement he was making regarding the sudden demand that Food Not Bombs remove its storage container from the city parking lot where it had been serving food for the last few months. And I think that happened, in case people are wondering who are listening to this on the 18th. And then we also have the Cornerstone Carol Denny interview, which is a sort of a People's Park update. And let's get into all of that.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So first up, we have an interview with Carol Denny of Berkeley, Cornerstone Carol, as I call her, on People's Park. We've been covering a lot of the struggle up there. Again, successful struggle, and for me, unexpectedly successful, given what seemed to me to be a dying away of activism in and around the university up there. But apparently not so, at least not when I went up there 3 weeks ago and saw the fences breached for the third time around the area of People's Park that they were taking soil samples from and using the police to wall people out of, and reportedly removing and destroying homeless people's property in that corner of Bowditch and Haste where that was taking place. The streets up there where that bound People's Park, as well as Telegraph Avenue and I think it's Dwight Way is the fourth street. Carol also urges personal direct appeals and strong action with respect to the again, another attack on People's Park in a user-developed community park. Well, we'll let her speak for herself, and here we go. On the line with Carol Denny, who is up in Berkeley, and it's, the 16th of February. My day ahead. I don't know. In any case, it's Tuesday. How you doing, Carol?
Doing okay. How's everybody in Santa Cruz?
Well, cabin fevered probably, but otherwise, who knows? Although there's rumors of planned sweeps down here of folks outside the San Lorenzo campground, so that's a concern. But I understand you guys are holding your own up at
people's.
Huh?
I thought you guys had secured an injunction.
Oh, yeah, for a small group of people.
Oh, I see. So elsewhere in town.
Yeah, the majority is completely at risk, so.
Gotcha.
Which I suppose is the case up in Berkeley, too,
huh? It's hit or miss. I looked around today, and there are, you know, a lot of tents spread all the way throughout town and throughout parks in most places, but we also suffer from fence creep. I don't know if you guys, you had that around your post office, I guess, but
yeah, yeah.
We have a lot of places where they put up permanent fencing, so it's sort of a standoff.
You know, about a year ago, I noticed lots of relatively large number of tents along Shattuck, and then about 4 months later, they all disappeared. And you say are they? Or would you say they're reappearing?
Oh yeah, there's tons of tents along Shattuck. Tons of tents. I guess everywhere through town that where I've looked, it appears to me to be one of these things where if they don't receive complaints. They tend to just let people be. If they receive complaints, they'll dive in and move people. So,
does that, based on that notion, would that be the reason why, if I was accurate, and I only came up once or twice a month, usually once a month, you know, for the last year, that I noticed this diminution in tents along Shattuck suddenly for a period of time, and that it was what, the merchants suddenly decided to start complaining or something like that?
There are a lot of tents along Shattuck. Mostly, they are out in the, like, around the tree wells, toward the edge of the curb, and there's just tons of them. So I'm not sure what's happening individually, but it seems to me that the city certainly gave up trying to eliminate them entirely, and part of that is, I think, a recognition of the CDC guidelines.
And there was a time when the city cracked down, even in the midst of the COVID scene, because that I also noticed, and I was wondering what the heck was going on. Then they started reappearing again. So, you know.
Yes, we don't have anything resembling coherent policy, if what you're asking.
It's pretty random, huh? Well, what's cooking? I read the Chronicle's front page today had... not a terribly informative story about PeopleSpark, but not a totally hostile story to the user-developed perspective either. So, you know, what's going on up there?
Well, I saw the San Francisco Chronicle story as entirely hostile in that it implies that the issue is housing. And the largest landowner in
True.
Berkeley is the University of California. They have plenty of places to build housing if they wish to, but they're not building housing. They're building for-profit, public-private partnerships that are all about making money off housing and tearing down housing that is low-income and rent-controlled in order to do it. So the impoverishment of that particular article is skyrocketing, and I right away wrote in, but I also got on the phone and called a lot of people hoping that they will call as well. Speaking of which, it would make a lot of sense if you, as a reporter, as an interested party, would call Dan Soslock, the Director of Resources for Community Development, the guy who is a part of this completely deceptive deal to create so-called low-income housing on People's Park. That is not permanent housing. That's one of these deals where, hey, lucky you, for a short period of time, you'll have a roof and a place to wash your hands, and then we'll throw you back out on the street. I don't consider that to be housing. I just consider it to be a way to pick people off who, you know, in a moment of need and weakness, end up giving their information to a group of people who have no intention of actually providing housing.
Yeah, it's the standard thing that they usually do one way or another when they run people off of this property or that.
Resources for Community Development is not your standard group. Resources Community Development for Community Development really was a place that used to do the green thing, the right thing, which is take rundown old places like the one in which I live. They were our first partner here when we went on a 5-year rent strike. They partner with us so that we could do a full rehab, get rid of the asbestos, fix the roofs, and fix it all up, and then control it ourselves for low-income permanent housing. Now, that's a model worth respect. What they're doing in People's Park, or what they propose to do in People's Park, is give cover to the University of California's effort to build high-end for-profit housing for very few students that will be proprietary. Nobody who isn't currently a student at the University of California will ever get to live there. And that is not anything like the housing that, in fact, existed there in 1967 that the University of California tore down. And one of the flaming errors in the San Francisco Chronicle's article today was that they tore down the houses, the extant housing in 1967, in order to build more housing. Anybody who knows People's Park's history knows that, in fact, they had no particular plans to build anything at all. They couldn't decide whether to build sports courts or housing or offices. They hadn't really made their minds up. They just acquired the land, bulldozed the housing in the middle of finals for the people who were living there, including Jim Channon, now our renowned civil rights lawyer who has worked on People's Park issues for years. And they, part of the reasons that the UC Regents decided not to vote the UC Berkeley campus any money to do a thing with that land was that they had no particular plans for it. It was the lowest priority in their system at the time, which was minus a couple of newer campuses, including Santa Cruz. But they knew that without any particular plans, without any particular developer, it was just a very poorly disguised effort to get rid of the culture that they were so frightened of on the South Side.
It sounds a bit like what happened up here in 1995 at the what we call the Back 40, which is now currently the site of a sort of a poverty complex. I've heard of the military-industrial complex. This is the poverty pimp complex. Where there was a campground here that housed 200 people, and in 1995 it was owned by the group called the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, interestingly enough, and they arrested people and drove them off the property. Actually, they bought some of them off with a 2-week stay out in one of the state parks. As they'd done something similar in 1991. Their attempt to eliminate people for the winter, it seems particularly egregious. But, the standard business of, oh, we're here to build housing, I think it's the kind of pretext they're using.
Well, I would have to just gently disagree. Mm-hmm. In the late 60s and early 70s, the University of California made no effort to pretend that they had any plans to build housing there. That, again, that is why the Regents offered them absolutely zero budget to do a thing with the land. The land sat empty. It was full of broken glass and rebar. And people like Michael Delacour and a group of neighbors, including professors and students, built a park.
Mm-hmm.
Very different story. And I emphasize it only because there is deceptive mythology that's in the San Francisco Chronicle article is coming from somewhere, and it's coming from a desire that the University of California has to pretend that this has anything to do with providing housing. It is not. In a phrase, what the University of California is doing here, and probably around the campus that you have in your town as well, is the monetization of public land. And they do everything they can to disguise it, but these lands belong to us. They're public lands. They are supposed to be good stewards of public lands for the public good, and monetizing it is not for the public.
By the which you mean essentially using it to make money off of?
Using it to make money. In our case, the extraordinary expenditure on renovating a stadium for football that now sits empty is what put this campus into debt for the next 30, 35 years.
Which stadium was that?
It is the football stadium up here.
Uh-huh.
It's up at the mouth of Strawberry Creek. It's huge and it's old, and it could have been renovated without the, what's it called? It's called the High Something Center. They decided to put in an athletic facility as well as renovating the stadium, which is right on an earthquake fault. So, you know, football, I've got to say, I love UC San Diego's approach to football, which is, it's too expensive, boot it. And they got rid of their football team because the more important thing at UC San Diego was academics. And so they went all in for their academics and science-based curriculum. And up here, they just wouldn't let go of this tradition that literally pounds the common sense out of anyone who plays the game. So all I can say is we shouldn't have had to be burdened at all with the debt they can never climb out of now. But in order to climb out of it, the UC Chancellor up here in Berkeley, Carol Crist, has to find ways to take any land that she can buy or get some rich person to buy on behalf of the University of California and then turn it into something that they can monetize. And housing is their favorite cover because, yeah, by over-enrolling to the tune of somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 students, they have created a housing crisis that it would not otherwise exist if they would go back to what they claim their enrollment was. And what's interesting to me is the mayor of Berkeley, Mayor Jesse Ottaguin, is quoted in the San Francisco Chronicle article today if he were in favor of all this housing. Oh, housing sounds great. Oh, these poor UC students are sleeping in their cars and all this. Well, he is, in fact, suing the University of California right now, the city on behalf of the city of Berkeley, because of their over-enrollment. And over-enrollment is not mentioned once in this article that's on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle today.
Mm-hmm. Who wrote the article, anyway?
A woman named Sarah Rahmani. Mm-hmm. I've never met her. I don't know a thing about her, but I just wrote her a lengthy letter this morning and sent her a copy of our Parks and Open Space Protection Act, which I think is relevant here.
Maybe you can CC that down here.
I think I already have.
Oh.
Glad to do it again.
I haven't seen it.
It was passed in 1986. It protects all Berkeley parks, all Berkeley land that is used for recreation and park space, and requires the city leaders, including the mayor, to enhance and expand parkland. So it doesn't in any way obligate the University of California to respect our laws. Of course, they see themselves as exempt from any and all laws. It seems like they're public when they want to be public and private when they want to be private. But it does obligate the mayor of our town and the city council in our town to protect and expand open space and recreational opportunities.
An obligation they're not taking very seriously?
They don't seem to be. So I haven't heard a single one of them mentioned.
Yeah, send me a copy of that letter. I'd like to see it, if you're up for it, of course.
I'll send you a copy of the legislation. And what I would like you to do is get on the phone and talk to Dan Soslock and say, you know, what are you doing? This is not just any park. This is a landmark. And this is not just any park in the densest area of town. It's the only park in the densest area.
Well, send me the talking points, Carol, because you know a hell of a lot more about this than I do. So,
okay.
You know, and I will pass on those points.
I'm actually going to say no. What I want you to do is talk to Dan Soslock. I want you to interview Dan Soslock. What we're neglecting to do as a community and as a larger group of people who care about the way people are being treated as pawns, mm-hmm. this housing game that UC has tons of money, UC has great cover, is pressure people who can make all the difference. And as soon as Dan Soslock, who certainly used to be a well-intended man and probably still is, as soon as he turns to his board and says, you know what, we shouldn't do this, somebody's going to get hurt. We don't want to do this. The students have caught on. We should catch on, too. And that is, in fact, part of what happened back in 1967 and 68. There was proof that this is mentioned. mentioned in the Chronicle article that's on the first page of the Chronicle.
Anyway, as I said, I'd advise you to send me some background because you're, you know, you're sending an unarmed man into a knife fight here.
No, I'm not. What I'm trying to say is this is exactly what happened in 1967 and 68. They did have a group of designer architects who were roped into trying to be a part of the architecture crew for the People's Park area, and who decided not to, who saw what was going on up there and decided to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
If Dan Sosnoff gets enough community pressure, he'll know that his that Resources for Community Development, his nonprofit, is at risk of looking bad.
And good community pressure requires good questions. That's why I'm suggesting, you know, you send something to me that would, you know, alert me to those particular
all
points.
All you need is the Open Space and Park Protection Act. And just say, hey, what are you doing? What is this about?
Well, I can always ask that question, and he will say, well, what aspects of that particular act are you referencing? And I will say,
enough! I'm serious when I say it's a page and a half of beautifully written legislation, and this was not written by the mayor or the city council. This was written by the citizens and passed citizen-wide. The only way it can be overturned is with another citizen-wide community vote. Even if the city council and the mayor wanted to overturn the Open Space and Parks Protection Act, they couldn't. They literally cannot do that because it is now a part of the charter.
And when he says, I'll really be looking into that. You know, that's a very important issue. Thank you very much for your call. Goodbye.
God, you want to slam every door you haven't opened yet.
No, I don't. But I'm saying, what do you do when that slamming happens?
I'll tell you, you get there. And then talk to me. What I'm finding is people like you put up every barrier to making that phone call. And, you're a brave man. You have lots of information. But you're not picking up that phone call.
Well, I'm telling you what I'm looking for.
I'm telling you what I'm looking for. I must have called 16 people, and they're all going, but who, me? But who, me? Like,
yeah.
Yes, you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, everybody who's listening to this. Yes.
And I told you what I needed to do that. So that's what I'm telling you back. But let me ask you another question, since we're covering a variety of... Well, we're covering People's Park here. I know a week ago we were up there, and I interviewed numerous people who were taking down the... If not taking down the fence, going into the area for the third time and, reclaiming that parked area. Has anything happened in the last week that we should know about?
Nope, not that I know of. There is an effort a lot of students have decided to kind of move in and be a part of the community that is being watchful about the incursion from the University of California.
Including in the area that was fenced off?
Yeah, I'm not sure the fence is still up, but I have somebody, a friend of mine who's going up there today that's going to give me a call and talk to me about it. The fence is not a permanent fence. It's a temporary fence. It's kind of easy to move.
Yeah, they actually were moving it when we were there. They went in there, and, you know, then they shooed away all the media, including us. And they stayed there when we were leaving. This was on a week ago. And so I wondered if I think they planned to come back the next morning, and I guess they not only planned to come back, but assuming that Chronicle article is accurate in that respect, they set up, a number of tents and stayed there and had been, there in solidarity with those in the park. I just wondered if the fences are still down because they...
Yes, I don't know.
Yeah, if you find out, I'd be curious about that too, and... I don't usually have other people I'm contacting in Berkeley, but haven't heard much from Dan McMullen. Is he still around?
Why don't you call him?
I've tried. He doesn't respond.
On behalf of anybody but myself.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I do think that it's time for people like me to be telling people like you and the people who just tend to talk to inside their own echo chambers to talk to the city council, to the mayor, and to the various people who might be able to make a difference. For instance, the board of directors for Resources for Community Development is full of activists, full of well-intentioned people. You know, those are all people that should be engaged about the likelihood of people getting hurt and the necessity of parks. This is a public health issue in any time, but especially during a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Anything else happening in the city that you want to draw the attention of listeners to?
I don't know if you guys are experiencing this, but an effort to shut down commissions and squelch public input. And that's serious. It's seriously happening up here. And what's awful is people are so, they're going through so much that it's very, very difficult even to spread the word about what the city is doing.
Are any commissions actually meeting in person, or is it all COVID-ish?
All COVID. No in-person meetings, nothing.
Yeah, we had some in-person Board of Supervisors meetings, but that was ended in December. Not that I'm a fan of any of these meetings, but, you know, they at least give people a chance to get there. What people did here in Santa Cruz for a while is they were doing what's called noise rallies outside the city council because they couldn't get in and they couldn't persuade the city council to move to a larger venue where it would be, you know, there could be spacing and...
Oh.
It could be safer for, you know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
There was actually a building right across the street that was empty that people could go to, called the Civic Auditorium, across from the City Hall.
I think I remember playing there, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay. So they wouldn't do that, and they wouldn't even respond to it. They would just let you come in for 2 minutes during the oral communication period, and then they would ignore everything you said. Nothing would get on the agenda. Even when every single person was talking, for example, about, you know, defunding police in terms of the violent stuff. And, you know, instead they set up a little phony committee that was essentially closed to most of the public. But you get to, you know, you got to chat with the police chief for 2 minutes, and I think they had one brief Zoom, or maybe two brief Zoom meetings. I don't know, is there much... what's police reform looking like up there? I know there have been some legislators who have been trying to, you know, do something, but...
I don't know what the state of that is.
Yeah. I mean, there's an interesting show. I don't know if you watch... There's a podcast called Burn It Down with Kim Brown. It came off of The Real News, if you ever watch The Real News. It's out of Baltimore. And it's not a, you know, it's on the other coast. It's a much bigger city, and it's different. But it can the same issues: accountability for the police, undocumented use of weaponry, like, you know, tasers and chokeholds, force holds. Police officers should be living in the neighborhoods they're in. Things, you know, that they live in. Who can afford to live, you know, in neighborhoods? And at least in Santa Cruz, it's another issue here. And as you were pointing out, as the issue often comes down to in these conversations, it's all about housing and the fact that you've often pointed out that there's lots of housing, it's just not being used. So,
lots of housing not being used, and a lot of housing that they have taken off of rent-controlled roles. So,
what's the procedure by which that happens? Do you have any sense of the history of that recently, or?
Going through that in my building, what they did here was just start overcharging and then ask for an exemption from the rent board, who just gave them one. And they gave them one on the grounds that the people who were in charge of the building here, the board, just argued that they were a co-op. And I guess I'm...
This is your fault, Carol.
What I love is I apparently am the only one who noticed what was happening, went up and filed a petition with the rent board, got the file, read the file, took the time to argue to the rent board that, in fact, we file taxes that are not filed as a co-op, and, in fact, we have no equity in our own building, and, in fact, we haven't been had a tenant-controlled board for years.
When did that change?
It keeps appointing itself and each other and just is like a private club. And they keep raising the rent sometimes twice, sometimes three times the allowable rent increase, sometimes three times a year. So I proved all that and put it before the rent board. And they, out of sheer embarrassment, found for the board instead of for me. But in the meantime, they began to harass me so thoroughly, dead rats by my front door, destroying my car, et cetera, that I now am covered by a brand new law that's maybe about 4 years old, passed by the city of Berkeley, that allows tenants treated egregiously to have a free attorney to sue in civil court. And what I'm suing for is rent control. So,
how successful, as I take it, you sound optimistic, is if you had a successful response to this, you know, landlord or co-op?
Good heavens, no. You've clearly forgotten what a civil suit is like. A civil suit is just
goes on forever.
Eternity of meetings where, in fact, the likelihood of prevailing is high for me because of the dead rats and the destroyed car and the big X across my front door and so forth. But we'll see. I don't really know what to expect. I know to expect very little from the courts. I have a saying about the courts, which is never look for justice in a court of law.
Well, you know, the only justice in the halls of justice is in the halls, is what we say down here.
Ah, a similar sentiment.
Indeed, kind of. I think you mentioned this some years ago. You said this happened, this began 4 years ago?
We went on rent strike 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We struck for rent control and tenant control. We got that. And then at some point in the 90s, they talked us into converting from we were literally a limited equity co-op for a short space of time, to turn into what's called a mutual housing association. And we said, sure, you can do that for the tax advantage, they said, was involved, but if and only if we retain our rent control and our tenants' rights. That is a legal binding agreement that they are violating. So I don't know what will happen in court. A court is a crapshoot. All courts are a crapshoot. Depends on whether or not the judge has had lunch.
And you're the only person in the are there others in the building who are fighting with you, or is
Oh, yes.
And how many people does this impact in your building?
There are 26 units. There's probably between 50 and 70 people. We have like one studio and several one bedrooms and some two bedrooms. But it's a small group of people, and it doesn't affect a lot of housing. Its value is its model. One of only three rent strike based rent controlled buildings in the city of Berkeley, all of whom have been absorbed by and look out for the community land trust people. The community land trust people are into getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and they don't care whether they destroy your rent control or not. They only want to absorb your building and monetize. So they are part of this group that has hung around the fringes of our building and tried to monopolize the board into joining their larger effort. And the land trust that lives in has offices in Berkeley, also has land in Michigan and many, many different states. And it, again, is a lot like RCD. Looks benign, but you got to really watch for the details. And what they've done in our building is just pretend that our rent control didn't exist. And in fact, it does. At least that's my contention. And the attorneys I'm working with are, they're great people, but they're used to, the trouble you have in a building like this and with a rent-controlled building is that they know the easy way out is to give up your rent control. That's always the easy way out of a conflict like this. And I'm not going to give up our rent control. I feel like that was what we fought for, 5 years of rent strike, and it was hard. So I am going to stand firm on that. And thankfully, their animosity towards me and the terrible things that I've been assaulted 5 times, I have serious injuries as a result of that. I'm doing my best to just represent as best I can the principles that we fought for years ago. But housing remains key to all of our lives. And, I do believe that we are in a good position because we have so many people on the street here and all over California and all over the nation who recognize that housing is being used against people rather than as the obvious thing that we all need, that we all share. It's being used to make developers rich and anybody who can sit in the middle of these transactions.
I was going to actually ask you whether in the last year your position has improved and the number of folks, not just in your building, but elsewhere, supporting stronger moves toward rent control, rent protection, tenant rights has been happening. Have you sensed that happening at all in Berkeley, or is it unfortunately the opposite because of the...
It's unfortunately the opposite. Yeah. Rent control has a terrible name. They, as you know, tried and failed to pass stronger rent control legislation at the state level, and it failed. Nobody has more money than developers. Nobody hates rent control more. So rent control is in a terrible state, but all we can do is...
What's the effect of COVID on this?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, in other words, the fact is people can't... A lot of people are losing their jobs. They can't work. The source of income is down. And you know, they have this supposed moratorium on evictions, but that isn't a moratorium on rent. So, you know, people may be feeling under more pressure, maybe more inclined...
Yeah, it's a mess. Yeah.
You know, to stand up and address this even from their, you know, confined quarters. I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
We have a small advantage here in that even the rent board claims that we are a tenant-controlled board, that we have a tenant-controlled board-controlled building. So if they raise our rent in the middle of this COVID madness when everybody's lost their jobs, so many people here have lost their jobs, they will rip the cover off of their facade. But most people don't have that, and I really don't know, beyond banding together as renters and fighting for the most obvious and elementary of rights, what I considered a right that I noticed your judge, Susan, what's her name?
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things she said in her Santa Cruz opinion was, well, there is no right to housing. And I
oh, yeah. That's a favorite mantra.
I thought, well, this bodes well for the end of the 7 pages to say something positive. I love that because I just think if you don't appreciate that there is some right to housing, then you are signing yourself up for what we're living with right now. The guy on the corner who pitches his tent under the street tree.
Indeed.
I just feel like, okay, have you had enough of that yet? Because we do have so much empty housing in this town, tons and tons and tons of it.
You're also the author and editor of the Pepper Spray Times, though, which has a number of other unusual contributors, I've noticed, with strange names. Does this issue? Have you ever gotten into this issue with regard to the particular kinds of problems you've had in your tenancy, or is that something you've not gotten into in the Pepper Spray Times?
You mean, have I written about my building? Yes, I have written op-ed pieces, more straight op-ed pieces about my building, because I think it's important for other renters to know that if they're being abused in their building, they can band together and buy their building.
Can that be found on your website?
Yeah. There's a place called, I think, Odd Comments or Commentary or, you know, where I have most of the op-ed pieces, years and years worth, but it's not in any particular order except chronological.
And that's at Carol Denny, Denney, .org?
.com.
Thank you. .com.
Right now, though, if you were to, I mean, when we fought as a building in our 5-year rent strike, this was before Costa-Hawkins destroyed rent control at the state level. Mm-hmm. So we became a rent-controlled building because of the age of our building and the state of politics at the time. Now, it would still be worth being tenant-controlled, but you would not necessarily have a rent-controlled building. You would have tenant control over whether or not, I mean, ideally, theoretically, you would have tenant control over whether or not you were raising your own rent. So it's still a good model, as far as I'm concerned, to go on rent strike as a tenancy in an apartment building buy the building on the courthouse steps because no one else will if you're a United tenancy. That was our theory, and we were right. And then run the building yourselves with the aid of, in our case, a loan from the city of Berkeley and a loan from a bank.
But that's only happened with three buildings in Berkeley, or at least only three remain that where that's the case?
There were only three. That's my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there more you'd like to talk about that we aren't covering that I'm, you know, not mentioning?
Oh, no. Thank you all, citizens of Santa Cruz, for banding together and doing what you can to help people who are under the gun right now. I'm very, very moved when I see up at People's Park, for instance, and down here by the overpass, there's an enormous amount of people just organizing together to try to make sure that people get hot meals and get opportunities to get washed up. I know that that's happening in Santa Cruz, and I'm so thankful.
Well, I appreciate your, you know, taking the time to run through a lot of this stuff, which, you know, may feel, you know, it's stuff we probably covered before, and that, you know, but it's, I think it's good to reemphasize it and to remind, you know, your own particular struggle is important too.
Thanks.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's true because it, well, it can be inspirational to people who feel defeated or feel blocked or don't know where to go, and it can also be educational because it lets you know about the life that confronts a lot of folks that, who are in your situation.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which, I don't know, in a way it's unique, and another way it's not unique at all. So it's
Well put! We have so much in common, and there's always more poor people than rich people. So
well,
it's absurd to me that we put up with, you know, stuffing all the rich people into the halls of power.
Well, somebody said the rich will never be poor.
Yeah.
I think I heard that one somewhere. All right, that's it for me, unless you've got more you want to say.
Nice to talk to you.
You too.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now a little musical titillation from Garfunkel and Oates, a couple of comic singers I haven't played for a while. Two women who pretty frivolous, pretty funny, and, well, here they are.
Get on my go-kart, strap myself in, rev up the engine, let the fun begin. Put my foot on the gas and I'm out of the gate, but the faster I go, the more the metal vibrates. My body's tingling from my head to my toes, but the thing that's really buzzing, I hope nobody knows, cause I'm feeling kind of funny in a biblical way. Goddamn, it's shaking hard on my Georgia O'Keeffe bouquet. I never guessed this trembling machine would turn the motor on under my hood. Go-kart racing, accidentally masturbating. Go-kart racing, mechanical self-fornicating. Go-kart racing, no stopping till I cross the finish line. Shifting gears, I can feel my heart throb. Hope nobody notices I'm getting a lube job. Don't need no gentleman to start my engine, cause I can even feel a little rear suspension. Trying to cover up my scandal like I'm Goldman Sachs, but is getting real on this indoor track. I'm about to go blind and I feel like a creep, cause it's pressing on my horn like beep, beep, beep. Now my driving is getting erratic, this transmission is automatic. Go-kart racing, accidentally masturbating. Go-kart racing, mechanical self-fornicating. Go-kart racing, no stop until I cross the finish line. If the fruit is ripe, you might as well pluck it. Was gonna slow down, but then I thought, f*** it. No one look at me, cause this is it. Green flag, go, go, holy f***. Go-kart racing, accidentally masturbating. Go-kart racing, mechanical self-fornicating. Go-kart racing, no stop until I cross the finish line. Key change, key change. Go-kart racing, accidentally masturbating. Go-kart racing, mechanical self-fornicating. Go-kart racing, no stopping till I cross the finish line. Hallelujah.
looks like YouTube cut out some of the lyrics or beeped them out, but I think you get the idea. Next up, it's Keith McHenry, who gave me a call last night. If you're listening to this on Thursday the 18th, that would have been on Wednesday night, and said he just received word. Well, let him explain it in his own words. It is Wednesday evening, the 17th of February, 2021, and calling me is Keith McHenry, who's... have you been busy all day, Keith?
Oh, God, it's been a nightmare.
So I got some kind of message at midday that you were looking for volunteers to empty out the storage bin where Food Not Bombs usually has its daily meal. What's that about?
Okay, what about 2:15 this afternoon? A very nice man came and and said, "Oh, you have to move your shipping container, and we own this land, and we're building a building here, and we have to start, you know, preparing to build the building tomorrow."
Huh, really?
So that was the first story. There's been a lot of stories about it. Then after that, so he said he's going to try to help us to move it and so on. But that's moving storage, shipping containers was not really his forte. He built the buildings. So,
who is the company? Who did he represent?
His company name is, Ashton, Anton Delve Co. in Walnut Creek.
And this is a company that is essentially gentrifying a large section of the area around Taco Bell?
Yeah, they're going to actually build a 205-unit building with retail spaces on the bottom at that corner, correct? Mm-hmm. That's what and it was like this thing where instead of having to have affordable units as by law, they promised vaguely that they would donate some land somewhere.
How nice.
That's not clear whether that will ever happen. Probably won't. But anyway, so that, yeah, it came a little after 2 o'clock. He came and then it turned out that the problem was not originally his idea was that he was sent over there to get ready, and he didn't. And then it became clear that it was because there's a meeting with their bank to complete a $100 million escrow agreement tomorrow. And that during that meeting, there's not to be any people or any things, you know, in the parking lot. For some reason, the bank they're fearing that they're going to lose the $100 million if there are people in the parking lot.
Well, that's pretty dangerous. You got a pretty dangerous crew over there, right? I mean, they could do anything at any time.
Yeah. So anyway, suggested that they give us $1 million of the $100 million, and we'll move tonight. But I need to see the money in the account. That employee did not have the authority to do that, but he is actually calling his boss. And then I got a very angry call from a guy his name was Garrett, actually, from the office, saying that I had to move it, you know, by 5 o'clock. Well, by that time it was 4 o'clock. And after I talked to this nice person, Coy, COY,
this is from the same business that the original person represented.
Yeah, yeah. All the players in this are all got with the from Anton Devco in Walnut Creek. And so, anyway, so I called a company in Watsonville to have them come move the container tomorrow at noon. We made that deal. And so they're coming in to do that. And then I had to put out a call that we need to, before they can lift it and move it, we have to get everything out of it. So then...
What's in it now, for those who don't know? Or was in it what you had to move out?
We haven't moved anything out of it yet. That won't be until tomorrow. But There's like tons and tons of you know, rice, baby food, lentils, paper products, our tables, our tents, our bungee cords, our signs, our sandbags, bread, clothing, things like that.
This is all part of the COVID Survival Relief Center stuff?
Yeah, this is all part of the Santa Cruz Homeless Union COVID-19 Relief Center and Frito Bon's Meal. Mm-hmm. And
with some Huff support.
Yeah, with some Huff support. And then, so that's the situation. And then, so what's interesting, and the COI admits that, I point out, like, you know, if you have a $100 million escrow meeting that requires that nothing be on this property, you might have come before 2:15 the day before. And so that's a problem. And
what was his response to that? Did he have a reason why he was so, shall we say, last minute about all this?
Coy agreed that, yeah, it's pretty stupid that since they don't live here, they're never here, and they never go by, that they have no association with the city in any way, other than that they got a permit to build this building, that they didn't realize that there are people serving food on that land. And then, and of course, this land, we're the land that Susie O'Hare ordered us to go to when they blocked off the lot 27 to put equipment on it to work on the levee. And as we all know, they fenced off the lot 27 and never put a single piece of equipment in the parking lot for at least a month, maybe. And, you know, the levee project was done by the time people removed the fences to that parking lot and gave them back to the police.
That's the lot right across the street from where you're currently serving, both of them at Laurel and Front Street, right?
Yeah. No, we had been at the other side, lot 27 at Laurel and Front, across the street for, months. That's where we moved after we realized we couldn't continue in garage 10 because the space was too small there and we needed a larger space. Mm-hmm. And that's the situation.
And the city manager apparently got authorization, or actually kind of created his own authorization, which was ratified after the fact by the city council. I believe it was either in November or December, but didn't act on that authorization. It would have excluded you and fenced off both those pieces of property, plus the property over across the way, across Laurel Street, at where currently the Association of Faith Community has its small, a couple of trailers, a couple of people are parked there.
Yeah, there's two RVs there right now. Mm-hmm. And then some 10 people have moved back to the levee above them.
And so there are 10 people on the levee right above that property.
Yeah, and there's just like many, 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 many people are moving into the streets. You know, it's very popular. So that's what's going on.
Are you still issuing a call for people to come tomorrow to help you move stuff out of this large storage van,
It's called
container.
A shipping container.
Thank you. Shipping container, correct.
Yeah. And we need people there at 9, as many people as possible.
Well, I'll try and get this out, because actually it's an unusual circumstance. I may have access to the free radio, well, at least the free radio on the net transmitter. We can see if anybody responds. So people should show up at Laurel and Front Street tomorrow, Thursday morning, the 18th, at 9 o'clock.
Yep.
I can certainly put that out. On sort of other matters, there has been rumors that Jessica York has spread some of them. Santa Cruz Local has kind of reiterated them. I guess Lee Butler is quoted. He's the city's go-to sort of pseudo-homeless czar, or he's the underling under Martine Bernal that covers this stuff, that they're planning to move on the Highway 1. I don't want to call it a tent city or a tent trail or whatever the heck it is, next to the Funding Matters Center at 115 Coral Street.
Yeah, there was funny. There was the Sentinel headline was really funny. City predicts. That's pretty funny. So yeah, that's that.
No, wait a minute. I missed the joke. What was the joke?
The headline from the Sentinel was City predicts that the people there will be kicked out.
I see.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny that there's a prediction of that, as though the government can't possibly know what the other governments are talking about.
Now, this is any indication of an actual series of shelters or housing units or cruise ships or, I don't know, any alternative survival camps that people are being sent to as emergency shelter when this happens?
No. You get to find a place somewhere along the river. That's the official position.
Oh, along the river. I thought there was concern about the river flooding and debris coming down and all that stuff.
Yeah, they don't care, you know. And then there's also the possibility you could get a doorway somewhere. Or, you know, something like that.
So it's either a doorway or sort of a riverfront
property
that could be very valuable in times to come.
Or by default, people are potentially going to end up at San Lorenzo Park, much to the chagrin of the city.
Well, I had heard that. I think you mentioned that there was an attempt to remove a part of the park for cleaning. Although they posted stuff around the beginning of February, I saw some of those signs when I was walking through a couple days ago.
They took people's belongings, threw them away, and then announced it and put up those signs. Yeah.
Naturally, Anthony Prince has been to court to demand this cease, right?
Yep, that has happened already.
Oh, really? What's the consequence been? Has there been an order by Susie? What's her name? Susan?
No, not that I'm aware of yet.
A judge, yeah, I'm thinking.
It may have happened, but I don't know. But anyway, there was a letter describing that as being a violation of the...
Did it have any kind of effect on the city's bad boy eviction people who were, picking up and throwing away stuff? I did see there did seem to be considerably fewer tents in the area around the, the fenced-off area on the county property side of the board of the camp.
Yeah. Well, the county came and fenced that in. Yeah.
Well, I saw that, but I mean, on the city's side of the county property, there were less tents, and that was where the posting was. You must leave.
Yeah, because they took the tents and threw them away. Yeah.
Right. That's what I noticed.
Yeah. They took the tents, threw them away. Yeah.
Any reaction to the community by around Newsom's extension of the moratorium or the latest labyrinthine doings in Washington about alleged stimulus and...
The reality is we're just trying to handle the crisis as it escalates out of control. And that's our job. And our big thing is now, memorializing the 365th day of serving food, which will be on March 14th. Mm. And that's our next event.
Now you're going to have to move your storage item. Isn't this going to put a sort of a burden on you? You've been somewhat relieved that you could store all the stuff you need to set up every day to serve people food and provide other services there. Isn't that kind of a hardship for the workers and for the people who are trying to use those things?
We have our whole methods of and systems, so it will theoretically not be a problem. It's just a drag that we have to spend so much time tomorrow dealing with it. But otherwise, it won't be. Should not interfere with the program.
Any other? I mean, well, it's certainly encouraging to hear about the focus that San Lorenzo Park stood up with the community's help to the attempt to abusively remove them with no place to go in the middle of a COVID epidemic, in violation of CDC guidelines and Martin versus Boise and everything else, not to mention common sense and winter weather. But has there been that there are really only a small number of homeless people compared to the much broader number in Santa Cruz across the city. Do you have any comments about what's happening there?
Well, I mean, there the amount of like little camps and clusters of camps in the city is immense, and it's only going to grow. And it should, you know, and I would not be surprised, you know, a lot of the policies nationally and statewide are so crazy that it's guaranteed that there's going to be a huge increase in unhoused people during the coming months. And already the so-called moratorium, eviction moratorium, they definitely have kept from being in the millions of people losing their homes, but it's not stopping hundreds of thousands of Americans from losing their homes. And, you know, we're seeing that, like, you know, reports of this all across the country with fentanyl bombs. People are like, that's crazy. And you can just read, you know, local newspapers will often talk about it. There's different reports. Our papers, of course, will be silent about not even interested in investigating the actual reality of how many people are moving to the streets. But, yeah, so that's like a total chaos and catastrophe.
Are there any stats or reports you've received recently that would give some substance locally to into your concern and some backing to the fact that there's an increase in people losing their housing? What have you seen that would actually document this on a city or county basis? I know, you know, it certainly seems that there is this nationwide crisis, and we've read about it in other papers and so forth. But what about locally? I mean, you.
Well, I don't know. You know, the reality is they don't do any. You know, everything is completely screwed up in this community around that issue. I mean, the only thing of concern is to build luxury condos. That's all anybody cares about. And so the problem is that it's, you can only tell by just watching, you know. There's no real good census. There was never, at point in time, count was about the worst possible way to count people possible.
But surely Justin Cummings and Sandy Brown, who passed a measure last year essentially suggesting documentation of that whole issue, have done very important work as liberal members of the city council, or the shitty council, as I call it.
Yeah, well, they're an illusion. They're like they're avatars and have no reality to them. So, you know, it's up to us. That's why our focus is, okay, there's no government that has anything to do with reality except for send cops out to hassle people and some trash pickup, which we do appreciate. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, there's really no, you know, we just work on the ground with the local people on the ground, and that's all there is to do, you know, to feed people and provide hand washing and water and masks.
Any reports about from the Association of Faith Communities or Brent Adams Services or the Coral Street Complex, any of these others?
No, I haven't heard anything about that. I talked to Herb and Paulie and them at the Association of Faith Communities, and every once in a while they feel like they're making some headway with the city, but I haven't talked to them in a little while. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have no idea what Brent Adams does, so I hope he's storing stuff, people's stuff, and I hope that he's got showers over there, but I haven't been paying attention to that, but I'm assuming this program is still happening.
And you're still posting his services there? And
well, he came and, yeah, it's kind of funny, I never even noticed, but at some point he posted something alerting me to the fact that Food on Bombs is not listed on his group of services. And so I did not notice, but anyway, we handed out faithfully, and they're glued to our, masking taped or Gorilla taped copy of 1117 copy to our container without ever talking to anybody, which we actually really don't care about, but it would be kind of nice to ask. And
So people who are coming to Food Now Bomb Services are advised that you know, they can also go get storage from Brent and possibly
on the few nights
warming center activity on those few nights when it happens.
Yeah. I mean, even when he'll come and yell at us, I mean, even at the post office on the weekends, when we did it only on the weekends, he'd come and scream and yell at us that we never did anything to help anybody, and then hand us this pile of flyers, and then we put it on a ledger table, and then we'd hand them all out. And that's been the case for years. So it's just the normal thing, you know. He comes, screams at us, and we don't do anything. He hands us his flyers, put them on our table, and then we give them to people that want them.
Now, what's happening with the vets? I've heard, you know, that the vets still are excluded from the vets hall largely. They do a Wednesday sort of sing out in front of the vets hall or right across from it. And there are numerous vets in the San Lorenzo Park who are camped there or live there in survival tents. Have you had much interaction with vets? I know that they've reportedly gotten more housing in Watsonville and other places, even under Trump. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's apparently some people have been sent to places down in Watsonville. But I'm not seeing, you know, every once in a while and after a while they put some people in hotel rooms, which is good. And we interact in the hotels a lot because we have a lot of friends that live in these hotels.
There's been a significant increase in hotel room use, let's say, since you were able to put people up for a few nights in hotel rooms, essentially at the expense of the donated money to the union and to Food Now Bombs back in March?
Yeah, I mean, it did eventually accelerate to some kind of level, not nearly enough, but there, you know, I suspect if they gave out numbers, they'd say there's something like 200 people in hotel rooms. So that's not so bad.
Any word about COVID spreading in the group shelters, which was a real concern of the union and Huff and Food Not Bombs when we were protesting back in March?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the real strict militaristic aspect of running these facilities has seemed to soften during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So even the when I've gone in and out of the armory, or I've gone in and out of the camp next to the armory, or people are, instead of being like all security conscious and metal detectors and the guard and treating everyone in an abusive manner, it's actually they've been, you know, okay with people. And that is like a sea change in attitude.
Have you been doing that much, and have you done it recently in the last week or two?
No, but there's been a few, it might be a month since I've been up to the armory.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually attribute that to the fact that a lot of the leadership in the county and the city, you know, kind of disappeared with COVID. And, you know, there's a lot of early retirements and things like that, and a lot of chaos and working from home and all of those things have contributed to the fact that the people on the ground that are actually running these things are directly talking to people that live there are much more compassionate. So, for instance, there is like a little store at the camp next to the armory that's run by an unhoused person. I guess that somehow Jeremy had organized a way of getting, you know, snacks and stuff there, since it's so far, you know, you can't walk to 7-Eleven from there. So that they've got that, but you know, they've had their deaths in the camp, you know, in the county facilities, like anywhere.
Deaths due to COVID or deaths of for other reasons?
Heroin usually.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of people almost died from their propane heaters, like carbon monoxide poisoning in their tents. But I'm not hearing anything in the armory or. Nobody's actually said somebody had COVID in the armory or in that camp.
What about in the vets hall or the? The Association of Faith Communities, I don't know, is Laurel Street still open? I take it that's still a shelter.
Yeah, the Salvation Army is still happening. The Methodist Church up in California is still happening. I don't know. I've not heard of anybody in those.
So does this tend to, do you think, cast some doubt upon the fears that some of us have had that these group shelters are more dangerous than
then, you know, that they require, we thought they required immediate action back in March. Were we too hasty in that judgment?
I think that according to all the information that we had at the time that was in the media and everything about the dangers of COVID, that certainly made sense.
Mm-hmm. Have you changed your perspective on that now?
Yeah, it's appearing to be, at least in the unhoused community in Santa Cruz, not as dire a situation. I mean, I've heard of big problems in, like, shelters in Boston and New York and places like that, but I haven't, at least, and there was a problem. I don't know anybody died, but people got COVID in Watsonville. There's another shelter where apparently some people tested positive for COVID, but I don't really know what happened to that. It was just kind of a brief paragraph in Al Meisberger's story about dealing with homeless people in Santa Cruz. And,
any reports
there's just no real reporting on it. There's not like you can't go to a website and say, oh, here are five homeless people have COVID. Mm-hmm. Not like that.
Any reports from Monica Tone and the Pajaro River folks down at the in South County and on the other side in the North Monterey County area?
I don't have any, other than the meeting that was held. I don't know any more details. And I don't know if they've been, what kind of sweeps are happening on the Monterey side or not. We are starting a Monterey food at Bombs, so that's exciting.
Where will that be serving? Do you have any more details about that?
I don't know if they know exactly where they're going to serve yet. They're just trying to get the original meeting. I just got the first three or four people together who mm-hmm. showed an interest. There's also a talk of Mount Tamalpais High School kids are considering doing a food not bombs in Sausalito. There is that struggle that's going on with people that had their houseboats taken by the city, ended up moving in a park on Bridgeway, and now they're being threatened with eviction there, but they're getting a lot of popular support for, people coming by with food and clothing and stuff.
Those are the anchor outs, as they used to be called?
Yeah, these were the anchor outs. I think almost all, but maybe five anchor outs were destroyed, were confiscated and destroyed. Mm. South of San Francisco on the coast, Pacifica, there's a union starting up there.
What about closer at home with out on Delaware and Swift and the vehicles parked out there? I had heard that there was, we drove out there and saw there was all kinds of signs up and down the down Delaware. Any reports of what's going on? Whether they're ticketing?
The only thing that I've been hearing that's unusual is that people are getting $300 tickets. Now, I don't know what that is for, but it's typically they were less. But people weren't too clear on what. No one showed me one of their tickets, but I did hear a number of individuals say they got a $300 ticket on Delaware.
What do you hear from Nomad? Have they been out there? Because they were going out there, of course, months ago, trying to help out people who had battery problems and were getting tickets and so forth and told to move.
Yeah, I don't know if that happens anymore. I mean, we're still trying to help people. I just was trying to help a friend navigate. He can't read or write, and he lives in San Lorenzo Park, and he got a $523 ticket for damaging trees on the river somehow.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there. I walked through the.
I better go. I've got another emergency on the phone.
All right. Well, again, people should show up tomorrow at 9 if you catch this.
At 9 at Wall on Front Street.
This is on Thursday. Okay. Thursday morning.
Yep, Thursday morning.
Thanks,
Steve. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
I've been good, do what my mom and dad and God say I should. Go to church and Bible school to live by God's rule. So whatever people tell me that the Bible tells me, I will do. Walk the halls of high school with my purity ring. Unlike those other girls, I got my morals in check. It was easy to do till I got a boyfriend. And pardon my French, but he's cute as heck. But I made a pact to keep my hymen intact. And Jesus and I are tight. Never learned about the birds and bees. I was taught to keep an aspirin in between my knees. Cause the Bible says premarital sex is wrong. But Jason says that guys can't wait that long. And I don't want to lose him to someone who'll do him. I need to figure something out. Well, there's a loophole in the scripture that works really well, so I can get him off without going to hell. It's my Hail Mary, full of grace. In Jesus' name we go to fifth base. Oh, thank you for making me holy. And thank you for giving me holes to choose from. And since I'm not a godless whore, he'll have to come in the back door. Therefore, fuck me in the ass, cause I love Jesus. The good Lord would want it that way. Give me that sweet sensation of a throbbing rationalization. It's just between you and me. Cause everyone knows it's the sex that God can't see.
About 2.5 more minutes to this song.
Now I'm praying to the power that's the highest, but of all of my holes, this one's the driest. But we can't procreate if we anally copulate, and God's okay with sodomy, but only if you're straight. And I'm staying here no matter what, so I'm okay with everything but, everything but, everything but. Whoa, fuck me in the ass, cause I love Jesus.
Jesus.
The good Lord would want it that way. Give me that sweet sensation of an irrational rationalization. It's just between you and me. Cause everyone knows it's the sex that God can't see. Yeah, my chastity belt has locks, but sometimes you need to think outside the box.
And that's what YouTube describes as a song about God and butt stuff by Garfunkel and Oates. And finally, on this edition of Bathrobe Spears, Brad says, I got a long interview with Anthony Prince, who's counsel for the Santa Cruz Homeless Union and a number of other homeless unions throughout the state and the country, who's been working on this both dual track of organizing and court challenges, court struggles to restore and establish rights of people who live outside for at least half a decade, probably longer. That's how long as I've known him, more or less, since I met him in Salinas, way back in 2015 or 2016, thereabouts, when he helped to successfully fight an anti-homeless Salinas ordinance there, along with Wes White and others. Anyway, this is his call-in to the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting today that we had. And I thought it was actually going to be much shorter than it was, but he allowed numerous questions, some of which he didn't seem terribly happy with, but some of which he declined to answer, but many of which he did. And I'm going to let this interview speak for itself. This is Anthony Prince. And he is one of the primary movers, the attorney in court moving the protection of the homeless folks in San Lorenzo Park from the jaws of the city manager and the head of Parks and Rec and the police department, which, of course, were all colluding to chew them up and spit them out to various parts of the city in early January. And that was stopped by a combination of the community, the activists, homeless union activists on the ground, and Anthony Prince. And my thanks to all of them. Let's hear that. And that'll be it for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'll be trying to repeat this, playing this at different points on the Free Radio on the Net site, because we don't really have access at the moment to the archives on the Huff website, where many people get access to the show, because of power outages in the Midwest. But that should be remedied soon. At least that's kind of the optimistic secondhand information I get. But here's Anthony speaking to the Huff meeting by telephone.